We are going to be in James chapter 4, which in the little Bibles there in front of you should be page 1043. Okay, so if you've got the little Bibles there in front of you, they're green or blue. By the way, you can feel free to take one of those. You don't have to ask anybody's permission if you need one at home. You can certainly have one of those. Page 1043 is what that should be on. And then a little bit later in the message, we're going to look at another passage of Scripture. So just kind of have those Bibles close by, and I'll let you know where that next passage is found. So we're talking this week about living in the moment. Okay, living in the moment. James chapter 4, verses 13 to 17 says this. Look here, you people who say, today or tomorrow we are going to a certain town. We will stay there a year. We will do business there and make a profit. How do you know what will happen tomorrow? For your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone. What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. Otherwise, you will be boasting about your own plans, and all such boasting is evil. Remember, it is sin to know what you ought to do and then not do it. This last week, I found out that I am going to die on April the 16th of 2067. And I know you're thinking, okay, how would he have that narrowed down? And that's very easy, because since Al Gore invented the internet, you can go on there. Yeah, you can laugh about that. Since Al Gore invented the internet, there's this great website called deathclock.com. Have you seen it? Have you gone on there? It only asks you like 5 questions, so it's real scientific. The date you were born, if you think you're in good shape or not. I mean, you know, all this other stuff. And so it has on this thing, and then at the very top, it has how many seconds you have left. And it's like, you know, 1 trillion, whatever. But you see it counting down, and you're just kind of going, okay, that's a little spooky. I mean, 2067 sounds pretty good. You know, I'm kind of like, wow, that's not bad. But when you really look at that website, the one given is this. No one goes on there and contests and says, not everybody dies. You know, the administrator of the site probably never receives that email of, you know, I put in the numbers, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to die. Not everybody dies. No one contests that. You wouldn't go on there. Now, I certainly contest the day and, you know, all that other stuff, because that's ridiculous. It's, you know, totally unscientific and everything else. We all know that. You can't predict that. But isn't it amazing that we kind of live like we're going to live for forever? You know, we just have this attitude that we will never come to an end. And the Bible tells us, hey, you're like the morning fog. You're here for a little bit, but then it just all vanishes away. And, you know, it's amazing to me. I'm 30, and I'm closer to 40 than what I am 30, okay? So I'm in that bracket. That's the box I get to check now when you go to the doctor and all those other insurance forms. You're like, oh, man, I got to check that higher box this time. But the thing is that it's like when I talk with people and I realize all of these years that have gone by that I can't even account for. Some of you have lived a little bit longer than me, and you're, you know, whatever your age you are, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There are entire years that I look back on and I go, what did I do that year? I mean, I know where I was, okay? I know where I worked, okay? I know those types of things, but you just lose stuff. And it's amazing how that goes by. And the point is this, that most of us live life always planning the future, but never living in the moment. We're always goal setting, and this is where I want to be, and we get with our financial planner, or we are a financial planner, so who else do we need, right? Okay? And we do all of that planning, and we do all of that stuff way on out there, and well, I want to retire when I'm 58. You know, well, great. That'll be wonderful. This is how you do it. And so, boy, we do all those plans. You know what we're really saying? I'm not going to really live until that point. And if you're waiting till you retire one day so that you really live, the only place that you will probably be living is in the doctor's office, okay? Just talk to anybody that's retired or even near retirement, and they'll tell you, man, just wait. My knee hurts. My back hurts. This morning I had something else hurt. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And so if you wait and always think, oh, well, that's what will make me happy. That's when I will truly make it. You won't live in the moment and you will fail to see what God is doing all around you. You've got to learn to live in the moment. Now, most of the time when we hear live in the moment, this is what we think. We go to extremes. I mean, we're Americans. We like to go to extremes, right? Everything is an extreme. That's the way we do things, all right? So here's what we think, and this is what I immediately thought of. When I think of someone who lives in the moment, I mean, first thought in my mind is this. That was some hippie back in the 60s that bought one of those big VW minivan bus type things that, you know, were on drugs and sat around, played guitar and sang Turn, 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 you know. I mean, and you know, and did marshmallow roasting and s'mores and stuff like that. I mean, that's what immediately that I usually think, oh, if they're living in the moment, that's what all that means. They're not even planning for the future. And it's like we say, oh, no, you can't live in the moment because you've always got to be planning. The flip side is that we usually go to the other extreme. And the other extreme sounds like this. One day when I'm married, then I'll be happy. One day. And so that's the plan. One day when I'm far enough in my career, then I'll have a family. One day when we're out of debt, then we'll finally give to the church. One day when I have more time, then I'll join a growth group or join something that's going to really benefit my life. One day when I have more time, then I'll focus on my relationships. And you know something? I think we tend to live in that extreme, especially for where we are in downtown Cleveland and things like that. We have a lot of young professionals that come here, and a lot of them, you know, are gone, and man, their jobs require them to be gone a lot. The problem is if we're not real careful, and let me just warn you of this, young professionals, you can live the one day when and then life, and you realize that you lose entire years. Now, what somebody usually does in their mind about this point is that they go, are you asking me to not work hard? Are you asking me to do something radically different, and I just almost get lazy? You know, and that's usually what happens with people. We just go kind of to the extremes. What I'm saying is this. God would look at you and say, you must be a hard worker because you are a representative of Christ. If you're not, it's back on him. You see what I'm saying? You begin to embarrass him and his cause and what he's doing. But if we go to the other extreme of, well, one day, then I will finally, what you will find out is we can talk about all the good intentions in the world, and that's where most Americans live, is in the good intention world. I'm a good person. I have a good heart, but we don't have any action behind it. We intend to do something, but there's no action. And I think where we've gotten into as a culture is this. If I think good thoughts, and if I have a good attitude about something, or if I feel sorry enough for someone else that's going through a hard time, then I've really done something. You've done absolutely nothing. And I've done absolutely nothing. We've got to learn to turn our intentions into actions. And instead of sitting back and always say, one day when, then I'll do such and such, you will find out it will never happen. It will never happen. I've heard of couples saying before, well, you know, we're going to save up enough money, you know, to have a kid. Okay, well, how much money do you think that takes? Well, now we're going to say, and I'm going, man, they'll never get there. They'll never get there because it will always be something else and their money will always go somewhere else. You've lived that life. You've lived long enough to know that a lot of times you think, well, I'll save up for a certain thing, but boy, there's enough stuff that comes up in front of us that we just use it on other things. Unless we've got a plan, unless we say, we're not just going to intend to do something, we're going to have a plan. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. If you had 30 days to live, you knew for sure you had 30 days to live, I guarantee you, you would live in the moment. And you know what's really odd? You really don't know how long that you have. Now, most of us know that, you know, the average age that people are living to in the United States, I think it was released the other day, was like 74, 75. That's really good, okay? But we all know of stories of a tragedy happening. We all know of stories of finding out from the doctor something that, wow, they've got cancer. Wow, they've got this. Or wow, a car wreck. What? How did that happen? Somebody else just ran a stoplight. And I'm not trying to scare you as much as I am helping you to redeem life and to live in the moment. And as the Bible records, God didn't say don't plan for the future, but what he said was, if God so wills, if God pulls us in that direction, if God's leading us, then this is what's going to happen. And I think it's so crucial for us that as we think about if we had 30 days to live, what are we doing living in the moment right now? Because what I hear from a lot of people are a lot of plans about the future, but they don't really live in that moment. You know, one of the things when I was growing up, I grew up in Arkansas, and one of the things down there that they have an abundance of is tons of lakes and rivers and streams, okay? I miss that. I missed that big time. And one of the things that I remember, and I mean, I can just go back to it if I close my eyes, and I can go back to one of those lakes. I can visualize it. I can see the mountains coming up out from where the water is, and it's gorgeous, and the pine trees being all around, and as the wind blows, you can just hear that, you know. I can go back to all of that, and I can see the water just as smooth as can be. And me and my brother picking up smooth rocks, and probably you've done this before at some point in time, and finding that really smooth rock, and, you know, you skip it across the water, you know, and you've got to wait for one of those really still times. Obviously, you can't do it while it's turbulent, but you wait for one of those really still times, and you see how many times that you can make it skip across through there. And in my mind, and I can smell the pine smell. I can even smell the water. I can hear it as it comes up on the shoreline, you know, just really gracefully and really slowly on a smooth day, and skipping those rocks across. And as they skip across, counting the number of times and seeing who can get the best one, you know. And what I think that we a lot of times do, and I want this to kind of be the metaphor for this morning, we do life like that. We get going so fast that we just skim across the surface, and we think we're going to make it, man. We're just going to keep skipping across the surface. We're just going to keep skipping across the surface. And in one of these days, the rock, our life, comes to an end, and we drift to the bottom. And we treat life like that. We're like the skipping rock, where we don't really make time to really get good relationships. We don't make the time to really listen to somebody. We don't make the time to seek out that coworker that we know is going through that divorce, or their kid's really sick, or they don't know what's wrong with their kid and they're having to go see the doctor. We don't make time to go over there and say, hey, you know, what's going on with that? You know, at the next break, you know, let's hang for 5-10 minutes. Tell me what's going on. And we just kind of skim across the surface, and we never really get to know people. We never let people get to know us. And I know what the excuse is. Man, I'm just so busy. You don't understand how busy I am. You don't understand how busy I am. And you know what I always go back to? I always go back to this. Who invented time? God invented time. Who invented you? God invented you. God's given you plenty of time for you. But what we usually do is we choose a ton of things that aren't good for our time, and then we're frustrated because we don't have enough time. Now, I know your jobs require a lot of you. I am not saying that at all. I know some jobs, I'm like, wow, man, that's a ton of time. But here's the deal. Throughout our jobs, God hadn't just placed us there to draw a paycheck, because if that's all you're doing, you're going to be miserable in about 5-10 years if you're about 25. Because if all you're doing is drawing a paycheck, you're going to find out life's not meaningful this way, and you're going to get burnt out, and you're going to be like, man, I'm not pulling these hours anymore. You don't have a purpose. And the reason is because you plan so far ahead and you've done a one day when, and then I'll do this thing instead of living in the moment. Maybe you ought to take that lunch time to find a friend or call somebody and say, hey, lunch next Thursday. You don't have to do this every day. Lunch next Thursday. Let's just meet. Let's just hang for 30, 45 minutes. That's all I've got for lunch. Let's just find out what's going on. You know what you'll do? More than likely, you'll go back to work with a little bit more sense of purpose. And the reason is because you're drawing from relationships rather than drawing from your job. If you're just drawing from your job, you're going to go to empty. You're going to go to empty. I don't care how fired up about it you are right now, you will. Because God didn't design you for that. He designed you to work, no doubt about it. You are designed to work, okay? You're not getting out of that one. You are designed to work. God said you're going to work. But he designed relationships first. You were designed for that. And if you don't learn to live in the moment, you're just going to be like that rock that skips across the water, man. You're going to think everything is going great until one of these days you run out of momentum, you run out of velocity, and life's over, and you're going to look back and go, man, what did I do with my time? I didn't do much with it. I want you to turn over with me to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, verses 40 to 56. Page 885 in those Bibles there in front of you. And the reason why we're referencing this particular passage is this. Jesus was a man on a mission, wasn't he? Jesus was busy, but he was never in a hurry. Jesus was busy. The guy worked hard. No one said, oh man, he just sat out there waiting for a crowd to show up. He never did that. He was always on the move. He would hang out, but then there would be times that he would go for periods of solitude because he knew he had to have it. He needed his relationship with his Father. Then he had time for his disciples. Then he had time for a little bit larger group, and then he had time for the masses. Jesus was a man on a mission. He was busy, but he was never in a hurry. Listen to this passage starting in verse 40 of chapter 8. On the other side of the lake, the crowds received Jesus with open arms because they had been waiting for him. And now a man named Jairus, a leader of the local synagogue, came and fell down at Jesus' feet, begging him to come home with him. His only child was dying, a little girl, 12 years old. As Jesus went with him, he was surrounded by the crowds, and there was a woman in the crowd who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years. She'd spent everything she had on doctors and still could find no cure. She came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his robe. Immediately, the bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. Everyone denied it, and Peter said, Master, the whole crowd is pressing up against you. But Jesus told him, no, someone deliberately touched me, for I felt healing power go out from me. When the woman realized that Jesus knew, she began to tremble and fell to her knees before him. The whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and that she had been immediately healed. Daughter, he said to her, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. While he was still speaking to her, a messenger arrived from Jairus' home with the message, your little girl is dead. There's no use troubling the teacher now. But when Jesus heard what had happened, he said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Just trust me and she will be all right. When they arrived at the house, Jesus wouldn't let anyone go in with him except Peter, James, and John, and the little girl's father and mother. The house was filled with people weeping and wailing, but he said, stop the weeping. She isn't dead. She is only asleep. But the crowd laughed at him because they all knew she had died. Then Jesus took her by the hand and said in a loud voice, get up, my child. And at that moment, her life returned, and she immediately stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were overwhelmed, but Jesus insisted that they not tell anyone what had happened. Now, let me ask you this question. Somebody's dying, and Jesus knows this. He's a man on a mission. He's going to go deal with the situation. In the middle of a massive crowd with people constantly bumping up against him, as Peter pointed out to him, he says, somebody touched me. I'm sure the disciples were like, is he losing it? I mean, there are thousands of people around here. They are bumping into him, of course. And Peter even points it out. You know, Peter is about the only loudmouth of the group, okay? He was the only one boisterous enough to usually say something. And so Peter does what he normally does, and that is like, okay, if no one else is going to talk, I'm going to talk. Hey, Jesus, people are bumping up against you all the time. And he said, no, someone deliberately touched me, not by accident, on purpose. And I felt healing power leap from me. what's going on, and he stops. Can you imagine what's going through Jairus' mind? My little girl is dying, and you're stopping because you feel like somebody touched you. Let's get on with the show. And then all of a sudden, this lady starts saying, okay, it was me, it was me. When you look at the importance of the moment, the urgency of the moment, Jairus' daughter, his only daughter, is dying. And this is a woman who's been bleeding for about 12 years. She's not dying. She's just sick. She's just sick. And Jesus stops and goes, hey, what's going on here? He was a man on a mission, and he was busy, but he was never in a hurry. And when we skim across life and we don't develop relationships with people and we're just, man, we're all about what it's going to be like in 10 years, you're going to be a really sad person. I'm just going to warn you. I'm just going to warn you. And I've heard people say before, oh, you know, I've heard CEOs say before, well, you know, it's lonely at the top. It's lonely at the top. You know, there's a, I usually look back and say to them, hey, man, it's because you didn't bring anybody with you. You didn't bring anybody with you. Yeah, if you treated people as a commodity, yeah, it's lonely at the top. If you treated people as someone to take advantage of, it's lonely at the top, no doubt about it. And yes, there are some things that only another CEO just like you would understand what it's like to be that way. But if you're lonely, you chose it. Because there's enough people out there that you can find friends. Now, you may not find more than three, but I found in my life, if I can find really good three really good friends who will stick with me no matter what, my life is full. Now, I'm not full with not having more friends. I mean, that would be great. But man, my life is full if I can find three people who no matter what would come help me out if I called them and said, hey, I got to come. I need your help. Please come. And you know, when you look at this story, Jesus was one who treated everyone the same. He wasn't so hurried that he didn't invest. He invested in those relationships. He invested in people. And he said, you're important. You're important. He didn't have a one-day win then. He lived in the moment, and the moment required that he stop. The moment that required that he stop, even though it was a very urgent situation. And I think that's just some things that we can draw from. I want to give you a couple of GPSs this morning. This is our good practical stuff, is what we call that. Living in the moment means that no matter where we are, that we are all there. I want you to really let that sink in. Living in the moment means that no matter where we are, that we are all there. I'm going to tell you, if you're in a relationship right now, you're like elbowing or you're like writing that down to email to your significant other, all right? Because like, that's what I was trying to say. You never, you know, I know you're going to use this when you get home, okay? My wife is going to use this because I am not good at that, all right? Ladies, here's what you need to know. You are incredible multitaskers. We are not. Let me repeat that for you, ladies. You are incredible multitaskers. We are not. Not slightly, not a little bit, not at all. When we get locked in to TV, or we're locked in to computer, or locked in to work, or a project, when you want to just talk, that is a huge interruption to us because we are not built like that. I know you. You can iron, text message somebody, watch the TV, and talk on another phone if you absolutely needed to. And yell at your neighbor, hey, how are you? Okay. You can do all that. We cannot do that. If we do that, our brain switches inside of our head. I mean, something short circuits and we have to sit there in this glazed look like, oh, that really hurt, you know? We're not built like that. We can't do that. But the one thing, guys, that we have to learn how to do, especially in relationships, and I do not do it well, and Sherry catches me all the time, because I'll do that, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And then she'll go, what did I say? hate that. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about, you know? And I go, you said, and man, my mind's like going, you know, trying to rewind anything. You said that your mom called and we're going to go over there Sunday. No, I told you that yesterday. But I remembered that. I mean, that was really good, right? You know, I mean, we salvage anything that we can. No, that's not what I said. But then you said that you got a phone call and you're just watching to see if they're going to give you, you know, a nonverbal, you know, kind of thing like yes. And then when you see it's not, you're like, I did not remember. You know, did you get a phone call? You know, guys, we're terrible at that, and we've got to work at that. Let me encourage you of one thing, guys, that I'll hear back, okay, a lot. When you go on vacation, be on vacation. Live in the moment. I understand emergencies are going to happen. You got to deal with those, okay? But an emergency is not, hey, they need another piece of paper from me from work. No. Let it go to voicemail and say you're out of range. Whatever you got to do. Protect your family, because at the end of the day and at the end of your life, that's all you've got, because your work will replace you. I know you think you're irreplaceable. You're not. As much as they look at you and say, man, I don't know how we're going to replace you, they will. It's amazing. The United States of America didn't stop 20 years ago when the huge changeover happened between, you know, the generation before and now then the new generation. They downsized. You know why they downsized? Because they knew you'd do twice the amount of work. That's exactly right, okay? Hey, get one of those young guys in there, pay him less, and he'll do twice as much work. If someone comes to me with one more technological piece that's going to simplify my life, I'm going to throw it at them. Because every time it simplifies, it just means that I have to spend more time doing something, right? I mean, that was the promise of technology. It'll make our lives easier. We're going to retire earlier because everything will be so much more simple. Is your life more simple? No, it's not, because now then they know wherever you go, there's Wi-Fi available. And you better get on that computer and get that stuff into us. And you know something? Sometimes you just have to draw the line and say, what is more important? Living in the moment is this. And I realize that not everybody in here has kids, but you will one day. You'll get married or whatever. Live in the moment, because dads, guys, when you come home, that's the most significant investment you will make. I haven't lived in Cleveland but about 3 years, but I already know of two people that I can drive you over to their home today who are wealthy beyond probably what you will ever be wealthy. And their family hates and despises them. And nobody comes around. And that dude is so lonely, he hires a cleaning person to come over. And of course, he doesn't hardly dirty up anything, but make sure that they come twice, maybe three times a week. Kids are waiting on him to die, all right, because what do they get? They get the money, but they don't want the man. I've been around funerals before where I've sat there and said, hey, you know, tell me some funny stories or some really cool stories about, you know, your dad or your mom, whatever else. They're like, he was just a sorry, good-for-nothing guy. I ain't got nothing good to say about him. Oh, okay, that makes it really easy on a pastor. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, what are you going to get up there and say? We all know Fred. Fred was a great guy. No one's buying that. I really want to encourage you. Relationships. Relationships is living in the moment. And I know it's easy to get torn in 1,000 different directions, but you've got to turn your intentions into action. You got to plan for it. So let me give you a few things here that I think will help you, because I talked earlier about that all of us been given time, okay? God's given you plenty of time. That's not the issue. He's given you your life. He knows the time in which you live. He knows all of those things. So how do we maximize living in the moment? Here's a couple of things that I think will help you. Every morning when you get up, pray and ask God for wisdom for the day. Because everybody else has got time, but not everybody else has got wisdom. Here's what I found out. When I just scream through the day and I know I've got mailers to get out and all this other stuff's going on and emails and we got to get our growth group started and we got to do this. If I just scream through the day, I lose time. And the reason is because God's not going to honor it. It doesn't mean a day is going to go so much more better, You know, like, oh, it's so much easier. But it's amazing how God maximizes my time. But when you just scream through the day and then you're just like, I can't believe it, I never have enough time. You're just not relying on God's wisdom, because that's something that he gives if you ask for it. The Bible's very clear. He says, hey, if you ask for wisdom, he gives it to anybody who asks for it. He says he doesn't withhold that from anybody. Ask for that wisdom before you start the day. It only takes you about 30 seconds, and 30 seconds is being very generous. God, as I approach my day today, I know that I'm going to have a lot to get done, and there's probably going to be something urgent comes up that I don't even know about yet, through work or a relationship or whatever else. God, give me wisdom. It's what Jesus did. You talk about a guy that's got a little bit of pressure. He knows he's supposed to die for the sins of the world. There's pressure. A lot more pressure than what your job is. Jesus was busy, but never in a hurry. Second thing that I think that you can do is this. Practice slowing down. And I know you're going to say, no way. Yeah, practice slowing down. You got to practice it. Again, good intentions don't mean anything. You got to turn it into action. Here's how you can do that. Okay? Here's one of the ways you can do that. On one of your lunches, or maybe a break time or whatever else, invite somebody to lunch. Find out what's going on in their life. Talk about them. Don't talk about you. Okay? Talk about them. Find out what's going on. They may ask you some questions. Answer their question. That's fine. Find out what's going on with them. You're going to find out that because you're drawing from that relationship, you've got strength for the rest of the day. It's uncanny how it works. Absolutely uncanny. And be prepared. They may unload on you. I mean, they may say, man, you're not going to believe it. And, you know, and you're like, take a breath. You know, take a breath. But what you're going to find out is God's going to use you in an amazing way. Let me tell you another way to kind of slow things down around the office that they can't say really anything to you about. Take an extended potty break, okay? Even if you don't need to go, just go in there. Because nobody can go in there and bang on your stall and say, hey, hey, you get out of here and get back to work. Now, if you're in there for an hour, okay, now you've really pushed it. Go in there for 5 minutes just to go, okay, let me just calm these things down, okay? Because very rarely is somebody going to come in there and go, hey, is that you, Russ, underneath? Hey, Russ, what's up? Okay, if they do that, just tell them, please leave, okay? You're a little over-friendly. I'll talk to you at lunch. I'm not talking to you in here. Get in there and just slow down. You're not going to miss the 5 minutes. You're not going to miss it. I promise you, okay? Another thing is this, turn intentions into action. We've talked about that. Turn intentions into action. Now, let me give you the practical one for the church, because I was talking with someone this last week, and, you know, I know for young professionals especially, time is just, you know, your jobs take you everywhere. This person had been gone 15 days, you know, then they went on vacation. They were just like, man, you know, how do I want to be involved in church, but how do I be involved in church when my job's all the time taking me away, and then I come back in for maybe a couple months and I'm gone again? How do I do that? What am I supposed to do? Because most of the time people think, church, man, you're supposed to be there all the time. You're supposed to go to everything that they've got, and I don't have that kind of time. Let me just take some pressure off of you. This is the way I usually think with a young professional, okay? This is the way I usually think. I know if someone's absolutely gung-ho about a church, like Gateway, for example. I mean, just, man, it's all about Gateway. I can't wait to be there. I want to volunteer. I'm going to help set up. Then I'm going to help tear down. Then I'm going to help fold stuff. Then I'm going to help design stuff. Then I'm going to call people. The maximum amount of time that a young professional could actually do, and this is a person totally gung-ho, is about 8 to 10 hours a week. That would be just being at church, going to growth group, helping fold things, calling people, set up a missions trip. I mean, the maximum on a weekly basis. I know, like, for example, last week, Ben gave 12 hours really rehabbing our website, working on a bunch of things. Ben can't give 12 hours every week. It about killed Ben to give 12 hours because he's already given 65 to Key Bank, and they call him at weird hours in the night because he's a techie, okay? You know, fix this server, you know? And so he's got to manage all that stuff. He can give 12 hours every once in a while, but he can't do it every week. It'll burn him out, and he'll finally say, forget it. So here's what I told this guy. I said, here's what I look at with the life of a young professional. First of all, their entire life belongs to God, okay? Their life doesn't belong to the church. Their life belongs to God.
Hopefully they're worshiping God through the church. Hopefully they're serving and bringing people into the church. All of those things are certainly a part of it. But the number of hours that I would usually look at a young professional and say, hey, try to give this, because if everybody gives this, we're good. 4 hours a week. And let me tell you how I break that down. 2 hours on a Sunday morning, I am granting you time to get ready, which your job does not do, okay? They don't go, well, you got to get dressed. We'll pay you for that. We want you to look nice, okay? Does anybody get paid to do that? I mean, I would be shocked, you know, if, well, I'm on the clock and it's 7 o'clock in the morning, but I'm just now getting up and I'm brushing my teeth. I don't know of anybody that gets that kind of perk, okay? So I am spotting you some time. And then 2 hours the rest of the week where maybe you're involved in a growth group, which I would so encourage you to do because that's how you're going to meet people, okay? And you may have some other time in between there that you give on occasion. Like this last Sunday, several of you donated time to work the, you know, the funnel cakes. We had a great time. Some of you, I think, came because of that. I see a few faces that we met from that. But, you know, we don't do that all the time. That's pretty rare. We have really worked hard to make sure that we keep things simple but not simplistic. In other words, we're not watering anything down. We're just making sure that our punches count. We're making sure that what we do is intentional. We're not just doing church because, well, we don't have anything on Tuesday night. Put something down on Tuesday night. I know of churches that do that. I kid you not. You've probably been around them. You know, there's something going on every night. Now, we have different growth groups on every night, but I'm not expecting you to go to every growth group. As a matter of fact, I'd tell you, don't do that. But go to one and check it out. Most of them start this week. Mine is actually going to start next week because I am out of state. I got to go to a conference and all those things this week. So if there was one on there that you were interested to coming to mine, I'm going to be gone. We'll start ours the following week. But the growth groups start this week. The guys group, I think they're going to be moved in kind of, sort of, enough. The guys group is literally going to be right across the street here on East 4th. Steve's moving downtown, and Kyle's going to be his roommate. They don't have anything in their apartment right now. And when I say anything, I mean they have nothing because they just signed the lease. And so they're hoping they're going to have a TV to do the video stuff for tomorrow evening. No, we'll get that worked out. But the ladies group starts, I believe, Tuesday evening. There's all these different things that you can be a part of, and that's what I want to encourage you to do. And what I told this guy was, it's gone a lot. I said, here's the deal, man. We've got all of my messages on the website. And I said, I know that you didn't want to hear that. But I said, get on there, download. It's on iTunes if you want to put it on your iPod. And I said, wherever you are, if you're in Seattle, surely you've got 30 to 35 minutes before you go to bed one of those nights of that week that you can listen in, because that'll keep you clued in on what's going on here. You'll at least hear a little bit about what's going on. And I said, and join a growth group. And granted, you may be gone for 2 or 3 weeks, but when you come back, you've got somebody to come back to. Somebody that's looking forward to you being there and probably email you and tell you, hey, this is what we talked about this last week. This is when we're going to go and hang out. Maybe when you get back on that Friday night, we're going to go to the movies. You want to go with us? Yes, I'll be back in. That'll be great. That's what I would expect of you. I don't think it's too much. I don't think it's too little, because here's what I know. It's not about Gateway. It's about advancing God's kingdom. If we just market Gateway, we're wrong. Gateway is the conduit for which God's fame goes out and God's kingdom is advanced. So if you felt overwhelmed by church and, oh man, how can I do all that? That's what I would say to you. That's what I would say to you. And some weeks, yeah, you're going to be out of town. You're going to be in Seattle. You're not going to be here. But when you're here, be here. When you're in town, the growth group's going on, go to it. When you're out of town, get online, download it. You can listen to what's kind of going on. And your growth group will email you and keep you in touch and say, hey, this is what we talked about. This is what's going on. Got any prayer requests that you want us to share with the group that'll just remain within the group? It's a great way to maintain those relationships when you know that you're bouncing all around the country. And I know that you are. I mean, I know that's what half of probably the audience here has to go and do. And I really want to encourage you. You can always invite people to come with you, you know? That's a great way to do it. Say, hey, you know, they're not going to put the high-pressure sell on you. Come one time. If you don't like it, you never have to come back. That's pretty easy. It's pretty simple. Send them an Evite, you know? Invite them. Give them a card and say, hey, I'd love for you to come. But what I want to encourage you to do this morning and understand is this: live in the moment and understand that, God willing, you plan for the future. Don't be an idiot. Okay? I'm not asking you to be a hippie that, oh, you know, who cares about what happens tomorrow? God willing, the Bible does say that, God willing, we will do this. God willing, I will do that. If God so chooses. But live in the moment. Be where you are. Live in that moment and take it all in. Let's everyone bow our heads and close our eyes this morning. Lord, this is a tough message to give just because this is an area that certainly I struggle with. I don't know if it's just an all-male thing. I'm sure there's females that certainly struggle with that. I can't speak for them. I can only speak for my side of the equation. But Lord, it just seems so difficult for us guys that we seem to think that, well, because I'm working a great job, then my kids will appreciate it one day and they won't mind me being gone. And it's just such a terrible way to go, because the kids do care. And Lord, we're all required to work. You've called us to that. We're not just supposed to sit around as a free pass. So Lord, help us not to think that, oh, the goal of the Christian life is to be lazy and just do relationships. Lord, help us to realize that there is a tension, there is a balance in which we need to live in. And Father, help us that one day we've got something to come home to. Father, I look at my own life, and little Josiah will be here in just a couple of months, and I'm sitting there feeling so unprepared and wondering, what will he think of his dad? Not so much accomplishments and success and that sort of thing, but will he be at the age of 18 the guy that can't stand to be around his dad and just pretty much cuts off contact? Or will he be the guy that probably enjoys having his dad around, probably not interested in the advice so much, but enjoys having me around? And so, Father, I just pray for everyone in here, young and old alike. It's never too late to live in the moment. And Father, that we just wouldn't delay today what we should do, whether that's to call a friend this afternoon, call a mom or dad, maybe apologize to somebody or whatever it may be, but just to live in the moment and to take time just to kind of slow down on occasion and say, people are important. And Father, that we wouldn't be just like that rock that skims across the surface and never really has any depth and just thinks that we're getting away with things and then find out that life was meant to be lived, not to be lived in the future. Father, help us to live in that moment. Father, I pray for all the young professionals that are here, and I know that's not all of our crowd, but it's a lot of the ones that live downtown, and they're getting started, and they're trying to do this balance of life and work, and where does that end? Where does that begin? Lord, help us to be a church that encourages them, that's not giving them a way out, but at the same time is there to take off some pressure, help them get focused. So Lord, may we be an encouragement to them. I just pray all this in Jesus' name.